Thanks very much indeed. Just getting everything hooked up here. This is kind of right from the get-go, you get an illustration of how my life is made more difficult by my laptop, because everything is left to the last minute. There's always the temptation to keep tweaking. And so, you know, I'm not yet set up. So I've got my test running, that's good. But I haven't got any sound. So here we go. I mean, this is embarrassing, isn't it, to see a guy's system preferences so early on in the talk. Nobody wants to see that. Yeah, he got his system preferences right out. It was disgusting. It was pretty embarrassing stuff. Let's see if this works.
Testing.
Love it. Excellent stuff. It's downhill from there. Whew, okay, now, here we go. Got my notes. The thing is, I'm a bit of a shut-in. And I don't leave my studio in Norwich very often, and certainly don't come to these kinds of events as often as I should. So I didn't really have the measure of how impressive the speakers would be, and the caliber of the guests yourselves, delegates, and your intellectual level. So this is going to be a weird 45 minutes. I must say, not to do myself down too much, but I do feel like I'm coming on after the Beatles, after Dan there. That was amazing. I sincerely hope, Dan, that you've done that several times. But this is my first time for doing this particular talk, which is called, Is My Laptop Ruining My Life? So let me introduce myself for those of you who don't know who I am. First of all, I'm Adam Buxton. There I am as a slightly younger man with the sailor's cap on there, presenting the Adam and Joe show with Joe Cornish on Channel 4 back there in the noughties. The nunties. No, the 90s. Sorry. And then in the nunties, I was... that's the noughties. And then into the... Oh, Jesus Christ. We did a radio show on BBC Six Music, as you can see there. It was pretty intellectually rigorous type of a show. It was also a podcast, of which I'm very proud. Those are the things that I'm best known for, I suppose. So you have the measure of me as a person. But now I'd like to introduce you to my laptop. This is what I'm using today. It is a Apple MacBook Pro with the Retina display, which means that you can see the display with your eye. And if you a Retina is part of the eye. And in many ways, this laptop is the reason I'm here today. Now, this mother is so powerful, so fast, and so reliable that when I got it home after purchasing it, it made my old desktop PC look like a grotesque joke, and I just gave it to my wife. And now this is the machine. This one right here, this is the machine that I use not only when I'm traveling and doing shows, but when I'm in my office at home. I just hook it up to my Thunderbolt display, which cost more than the actual fucking computer. And I'm able to perform every task required of me with incredible ease and efficiency. So why am I worried that my laptop is ruining my life? Well, I guess it's because it has the potential to enable me to do so many things that I sort of feel guilty when I'm not actually using it. As if I'm just wasting my time when I'm doing something other than playing with my laptop, when perhaps the exact opposite may be true. At times I'm overwhelmed by the sheer potential for creativity that this laptop represents. On this one machine, I have all the software that anyone could need to write a book, lay it out. I'll just show you. Look at this. Look at my bar. Look at that. Oh, you can't see it. Should never exit the keynote program. Don't get out of the keynote program, man. But it's a lot. I've got a lot on there. I've got everything that you could need to write a book, lay it out, illustrate it, get it printed. I could record that dubstep album that I've always wanted to make, do the artwork, upload it to a website, design the website, sell it there. I could write a film, shoot it on my portaphone, edit it, create professional-looking post-production effects for it, and then distribute it once again via the internet. Yes, there is a good chance that if I actually did any of those things, they would be shit, but that doesn't matter, because a lot of shit things do very well. I don't know if you've noticed, so that shouldn't stop me. In fact, I have started many of those projects in the past, many times, but finishing them up is an irritatingly different matter. Instead, I sit there in front of my screen, hunched up like a little hairy gargoyle, further ruining my eyesight, burning off less calories than I probably do when I'm asleep. And within about 5 minutes of starting anything, I'm derailed by one of the many distraction engines installed on this laptop. Email, of course, is one of the most deadly of those engines because it seems the most like work. Oh, you know, I've got to keep the email window open because that big exciting opportunity might flop into my box at any point. I've got to be there to grab it with both hands when it does and handle it quickly so it comes to something. That sounds sexy, the way I put it there, doesn't it? Well, it would be sexy if it ever happened. In reality, all that flops into my box, apart from the occasional invitation to appear on some exciting new panel show hosted by David Mitchell, is a steady stream of electronic dog crap from various online retailers that I once shopped with, all of whom now send me messages every day at the same time, like a group of kind of semi-respectful stalkers. Stalkers, that is, who all happen to be stalking several hundred thousand people, just in case any of them are bored and stupid enough to respond. In me, they've found someone who is often both. And many afternoons in my so-called office have evaporated into long sessions online looking at men's jackets, because I bought one 3 years ago. And even though I've only worn it twice, if you count yesterday when I took this photograph, Some little shitty algorithm noted the purchase and thinks there's a good chance I might be stupid enough to do it again. By that time, when I'm looking at the jackets, you know, I'm on the most efficient distraction engine ever created, the internet. I've boiled down the essence of the internet into one image for you. And the chances of me at this point getting back to work on my amazing screenplay within the hour have just taken a massive duffing. From random vine to random vine, I swing like a kind of drunk toddler. I tell myself that the epic skateboarding fails might be useful for work. It's all good stuff for work, I think, you know. It's fine. It's absolutely justifiable. More than once, in fact, I would say maybe 45 times, I've spent about an hour reading other people's tips for how to stay focused when working at home. invariably, this seems to get dressed is a good one. It's a top tip there. Don't do it nude. There's all kind of health hazards involved with working nude. Pornography being the main one for distraction. And there you can see, read motivational material. That's a good way. That's a good way to get things done. And so I've spent a fuck of a lot of time digesting inspirational or motivational quotes. There's a lot of websites with these. To save you a bit more time, I've once again boiled down everything I've learned from them into one piece of motivational advice. If you want to get some work done, smash up your frigging modem. Failure to do this turns my laptop into effectively a giant door with a big sign on it saying, "Time wasters, always welcome." And in they come, an endless parade of musicians, actors, comedians, fine artists, directors, podcasters, precocious teens, politicians, weirdos, cats, of course, naked ladies, of course, the occasional nude man if I've had some wine, and I'm feeling a bit bendy. And following all those are the technical crew, because now you've installed all these applications, so to enable you to enhance your creativity, you need to maintain and update them. Otherwise, they become obsolete. You'll miss out. And sooner or later, of course, they become obsolete anyway. You have to shell out for a whole new collection of software that you'll spend another day installing and figuring out before going through the whole process again. Shit, I'm starting to sound like Jeffrey Palmer doing the Grumpy Old Men program. So, sorry, it would be good at this point to have a shot of Rick Wakeman saying, "I don't want anyone touching my dongle, thank you very much," but I don't have that. Now, I try and ignore my laptop's requests for updates as long as possible, but I do often make an exception for the laptop's irritating co-worker, the printer. There's the Canon inkjet printer update request there, and I like to update the printer every now and again because I have this vain hope that if I do that, the next time I'm dashing out to do a show and need to print my notes quickly, I'll just be able to turn it on, press print, and the fucking thing will actually print. Instead of just going... dashing out the door, please. Yep. Now would be great. Oh, fuck off. Hey, but I suppose, strictly speaking, that's not really the laptop's fault. What is the laptop's fault, though? Although I do appreciate that it's not a problem confined exclusively to laptops, is social networking anxiety squat. That's my term for the nagging feeling that I get, certainly, that I should be maintaining my social networking profile somehow. Now, I'm not much of a social networker, but a couple of years ago, I bowed to pressure from a few friends, and I joined Twitter. Now, I sometimes tweet information about shows that I'm doing or links to bits and pieces I've enjoyed online. Very occasionally, I'll try and tweet something funny, but I seldom do so when I'm out and about. This, for me, is another laptop ritual, and one of the more significant ways, I would say, that my laptop has recently made my life less pleasurable. Now, I've never taken acid, but from what I've heard, it's not dissimilar to being on Twitter. If you're a well-balanced, relaxed, easygoing person with no major hang-ups, then you may well have a fun and interesting experience on it. But if you suffer from any significant personality shortcomings, like, say, everyone does, then the chances are the experience will sooner or later magnify those shortcomings and reflect them back at you uncomfortably. And the more followers you acquire, the more intense the trip, which is why, being a weed bag who likes to avoid confrontation, I try and keep my Twitter doses as small as possible. However, the problem, or the brilliant thing, depending on your point of view, about online engagement is that, along with the positive, I'm also required to be prepared for the negative. Now, you've already had talk about this today, this kind of thing, but I'd like to add my own perspective. A human being criticizing me face to face is unpleasant, I would say, unpleasant enough. But when I read a negative comment about myself online from a stranger who has usually shrouded themselves in extra layers of anonymity and may also be experiencing, Twitter page there, they may also be experiencing what's known as the online disinhibition effect, the reduced awareness of other people's feelings. The comment that they leave, the negative comment, is refracted through the prism of my insecurities and ends up bouncing around my head and sending me mentile. I should say that not being an especially controversial figure, despite my views on homosexuality and immigration, I feel very strongly that Britain should encourage a lot more homosexuals to live here. I don't have a particularly rough ride on Twitter at all. I haven't so far received any bomb threats, for example, but perhaps that's because I'm not
a woman.
I'm pleased to say that the vast majority of tweets directed at me are perfectly genial and supportive, but as anyone who has ever read reviews of their work knows, it's not the nice ones that stick in your head longest. And there's something about Twitter that intensifies that critical distortion field. I could do a great show and have 498 people walk out unbelievably happy because they've just seen something extraordinary and brilliant. But if two people thereafter tweet something negative, then that is what sticks with me, and the show will forever be filed away in my head as a failure. Now, of course, that says more about my own insecurities than any problems with Twitter itself, and I agree that I do need to toughen up and quit being a butthurt pussy. But for the moment, if a stray negative tweet wanders in through my door when I call for the flock, it still has the power to ruin my day. I'll give you an example. Now, at the beginning of August, I went to Edinburgh to do four shows during the festival. They went very well. I had a great time. But the day I arrived home after the last performance, which I actually thought had been the best, I checked my Twitter feed. Now, there were a number of very encouraging messages from people who'd been to the shows. And you can see just a selection of random things, the kind of things that people tweet to me. But I also came across a less positive message, which said, this is a genuine message, I've slept on it, but my least favorite fringe gig yesterday was Adam Buxton. Just didn't excite or inspire. More of the same old AV. That's a special hashtag if you want to talk about more of the same old AV. And as you can see there, the author marked it for my attention by including my name with the at symbol, so I would be sure to see it if I clicked on the mentions of my name. I'm saying this for the benefit of non-Twitterers. This is generally how you communicate with your followers, as well as going on ego-surfing missions. Now, before I continue, I should say that I enjoy a position of incredible power and privilege. I have nearly 140,000 followers. I do the voice at the end of the Wrigley's Extra adverts on television. One of those ads has got Antonio Banderas in it. I starred in BBC Two's The Persuasionists, one of the most successful sitcoms of all time. So, if a member of the general public chooses to let me know they dislike me or my work, as is their right, it behooves me, really, to suck it up and console myself counting my loaded laughter awards. I have two. What isn't appropriate is for someone like me to rant at or seek to humiliate a member of the public who has had the temerity to criticize me. After all, as Stuart Lee, quoting Chris Rock, says, pressure in comedy needs to be exerted upwards, not down on ordinary folk who could only dream of starring in The Persuasionists. But I regret that on this occasion, this comment here got to me, and I responded almost immediately. And because I had a lot to say, I had to break it up over several tweets. Now, I'm not going to use this fellow's real name because I don't want to cause him unnecessary embarrassment. So I found a picture that I thought sums him up. And let's give him a name, for example, Timmy Shatheed. And I'll give him the Twitter handle twat. So this is what I... This is how I responded to that message. Hi, Timmy. It may surprise you to know that I care about the response of every person that comes to my shows, so I was sad to read your tweet. A lot of fucking work went into making the show as funny and well-presented as possible. What the fuck do you mean? More of the same old AV. If you meant you'd seen some of the show before at other gigs I've done this year, that's a separate fucking issue. But if you want me to dress up my material as more edgy or dangerous so it can fit in with your daft preconception of what constitutes exciting or inspiring art, then you'll have to stick that into your arse. I see from your previous tweets, because I went and checked his profile, obviously, got to do that, see who you're dealing with. I see from your previous tweets that what really seems to excite and inspire you is fucking football. So you'll forgive me if I don't completely rethink my creative direction. Sorry if that was all a bit over the top, but as you know, it's so much easier saying this kind of thing when it's not actually face to face. So, the question is, I imagine you're thinking, what kind of reaction did my tweets get from Timmy and indeed my other followers who would have seen what I wrote, because I put the twat handle at the end there, not at the beginning. Well, actually, there was no reaction at all because I never posted those actual tweets. Instead, what I actually posted was that. Thanks so much for letting me know, a little passive-aggressive tweet there. But he had no conception of quite how aggressive. So he came back very quickly with this response. I think maybe I built it up in my head too much. I'm still a huge fan. I love Dr. Buckles! So that's nice, isn't it? But it didn't make me happier. He built it up in his head too much. Basically, he thought it was going to be good. It turned out to be a load of shit. But he still loves me. So that's nice. I mean, hey, with fans like that, you know, you don't really need haters, do you? So that's the kind of thing. You know, I twist all this stuff around in my head and unnecessarily a lot of the time. You know, to be honest with you, when I thought I was doing, I knew I was going to do this today, and I thought maybe it's not cool. Maybe it might get back to the guy somehow that I'm doing this. So I messaged him and explained what I was planning on doing, and he got back to me very nicely and said, you know, that's fine. And he said he was sorry if he upset me in any way, and I explained to him that I don't send these kind of messages to every single person that criticizes me, because there just isn't time. But I do try. And he was really nice about it, and he sort of said, oh, you know what, the main reason I wrote the tweet, the grumpy tweet, was because I had a bad seat, so my sight line to the screen was kind of shit, and I was letting off steam, and it was like, generally, the thing is that as soon as you make actual contact with people that's over 140 characters, they turn out to be invariably pretty nice. So anyway, let's move on to how I spend most of my time on my laptop these days, which is not listening to Brian Eno, although I do spend a lot of time doing that. It is reading other kinds of comments. I read YouTube comments, and they're the best kind of comments there are. Basically, I do this show called Bug. I host a show called Bug every couple of months at the BFI South Bank in London, and we do shows around the country as well every now and again, sort of best-of shows. I've been doing it for the last 6 years. It's a forum for music videos. We show new and exciting and left-field and weird music videos by up-and-coming directors and other older, more established directors as well. But I host the whole thing, and to contextualize some of the videos, sometimes I read out reactions from YouTubers, genuine reactions to some of them. And I thought I would give you an example of the kind of comments that are out there. This is a new selection of comments that I put together for you guys. And it was thanks to someone that messaged me on YouTube. Actually, that's one of the nice things about the whole thing is that, you know, once the ball is rolling, people tweet me things and message me on YouTube and say, hey, you should check out the comments on this video. They're pretty unhinged. So that's good. I mean, it's fun for me to read them, although... It mainly takes up most of my life now. So my life's become very strange. Anyway, I'll show you what I mean. So this is a video, as you can see here, for that someone has uploaded. Basically, it's just a bit of their home movie footage that they have uploaded as an excuse to put up the track and ending, Ascent by Brian Eno from his 1983 album Apollo, Atmospheres and Soundtracks that he made with his brother and with Daniel Lanois. Wonderful album, and this is a lovely, lovely song that has been used many, many times on a lot of adverts on the Liberal Democrat campaign, I think, at some point. It was used on Top Gear. They used it when Clarkson was crapping on about Aston Martin, and it's used in the film Traffic at the end. Anyway, it's been used lots of times, and it's become a kind of, almost like a modern hymn in a way. It has this very hymnal quality, and so people underneath leave all kinds of comments about their own lives and about their philosophy to life, and I thought I would share some of those with you, beginning with one from N-U-I-K-J-H-Y-T. Am I missing, like, is that a special bit of, does that actually spell something? Don't be shy if you can see it, because sometimes I read these out and I'm like, what the fuck, is that a word, like, is it supposed to say nuke jit? No, I don't know. Anyway. Nukejit says, first of all, oh my God, I can't comprehend a masterpiece on this scale. Oh no, that scale is much, oh, that is too big, that scale of the masterpiece. I'm gonna have to back off from the masterpiece because I can't be comprehending that shit, no way. I have that a lot with a lot of things. Aidan Bentham says, this music is beautiful. Personally, I think this would go perfectly with the military as they fight for their country, dodging bullets and living in a war zone. As a soldier goes down, his brothers beside him help him stand again. Truly touching, inspirational. That's ideal, isn't it? And that's one of the best things I think about being a soldier is that you do get a great soundtrack. And this would be a wonderful addition to that. That would be my job if I was in the army, would be the ghetto blaster guy running along so that the waste of human life seems more meaningful. Another comment, thanks for posting. It would be great to listen to this while smoking a spliff at home after a great night out on the alcohol with good friends. That's from Tipsy McStagger. Who's got it all sorted? Lawrence G says, ugh, got melancholy feeling. Just did the heaviest sigh in my life. Oh. Whoa. This place stinks of melancholy. Did someone do a massive melancholy sigh? Yeah, sorry, guys, that was me. My bad, that was my melancholy sigh. Sorry, guys. Arch Deluxe, or Arch Deluxe, says, you could film a guy taking a crap on a toilet and add this song to it, and it would still be beautiful. 92 thumbs up for that comment. Let's just check. Yes, he's right. Crag Tom says, Makes you wonder how many peeps will moan about loss of signal for their oh-so-precious iPhone or laptop top. Like a lot of you peeps. Moaning about your precious laptop tops. But all it takes is to look up and see the beauty of life and how precious it is. It's true, isn't it? And there's a lot of these kinds of comments about life. And Graham the Puna, he's the main Puna. He's the go-to guy for pooning. He says, when I got my girlfriend pregnant and gave her herpes, she used to listen to this song to stay strong. It was a difficult time for both of us. This song is great. That's moving stuff. And Liam's Cool Channel also shares this thought. This song has also helped me get through all the bad things that has happened to me in my life. And I just want to say thank you for being there. Stay strong, everyone. Hey, hey! That's nice. Inspirational message. Craig Jones replies to Liam. Liam, man, I totally feel you. I've been there. Stay strong, man. Not sure I'm reading that right. The emphasis is wrong there, isn't it? Oh, and this song kind of reminds me of my first blowjob. It's great, great times. To which Liam's Cool Channel replies, giving or receiving, bro. Craig replies, giving it like a trooper, I'm afraid. Liam's Cool Channel replies, disgusting. Ha ha! What's your number? That's nice, people making friends there. And finally, Nick Ken says, this made me cry. I suspect I'm not alone. To which Finbar, 21, replies, I suspect you are. I suspect you are. Yep, 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 yep. There you go. That's time well spent there, I'm sure you'll agree, looking at those comments. So, I suppose the question is, what would my life be like without my laptop if I didn't spend quite so much time in front of this wonderful mother? I could be walking in a field, learning the names of trees and plants. I could be helping in a hospice. I could be brightening the remaining hours of the hospice patients with stuffed toy parodies of popular films and TV shows. I could be playing with my children. I have three. Dancing, laughing with them, making up poems, putting on plays. Or I could be making sweet, sweet love to my wonderful wife in new and surprising ways. However, what I probably wouldn't be doing without my laptop is making music. Now, music, I'm going to be sincere here for the moment. Music has been the focus of my enthusiasm since I got into David Bowie, aged 11. But despite several attempts to do so, I was never able to get competent, let alone master any kind of musical instrument. Nor can I sing, really, despite many boozed-up nights convinced I could. Then around about 2007, I bought a laptop, and that came loaded with a piece of software that I'm sure many of you will be familiar with, called GarageBand. There I am. With my new laptop, having a good time back then. Actually, because I'm posh, I pronounce it GarageBand. And GarageBand comes loaded with beats and instrumental loops that can very quickly, if you're not familiar with it, be snapped together in seconds to make some incredible, incredible music. But for those of you without formal musical training, The great thing about GarageBand is that there is a selection of rights-free jingles and music beds on here that can be used for anything. A lot of people use it for podcasting, and that's why if you're a regular podcast listener, if you listen to a lot of different podcasts, you'll often hear the same sort of backing beds popping up. That's because they've got them all off GarageBand. And they even use them in adverts these days. I guess, you know, everyone's trying to save money, and that's one of the great ways of doing it. And one of the first bits of music that I found on there, one of the first jingles that really struck a chord with me, because I just went through this one afternoon and was playing everything and having a good time finding out all about it. And the first one that popped out at me was called Island Long. And listening to this, I thought, oh, well, I finally found the musical Ma to my lyrical Morrissey. And the result, I immediately sort of laid down a song, just sang over this track, and the result launched a musical career for me that is now seen by many as one of the most important in modern music. Here is what I ended up creating.
Sausages, can you see my lovely sausages?
He's got a lot of different types.
Little ones and longer ones, they look like little meaty pipes. Chipolatas, they are tasty, yum yum. Sausages, I would like to eat my sausages,
but sadly we're raw.
Sausages, please keep your distance from the sausages,
or he'll show you the door.
Sausages.
Yeah. Now, you may be surprised to hear that Sausages took me approximately 30 seconds to compose. The words just tumbled out of me on the first take, and excuse me, I have some wind. Thank you. And I've heard that it is the same for many other legendary composers. Nina Simone, David Bowie, Prince, Adele, sorry. And Brian Wilhelm. Some of their best songs arrived fully formed in their heads, apparently, as if whispered to them by God or by Simon Cowell in the future. Now, the best songs take their place in the pantheon of great music, and they become touchstones of what it is to be human, what it is to be alive. Thanks to my laptop, I've been able to enter the pantheon of timeless musical geniuses. Here is just a short selection of some of the incredible music I've created on this very laptop.
Moby, 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 Michael Stipe, Moby, Moby, Moby. Moby, Michael Stipe.
Look at the jars, look at the jars, look at the things inside the jars. I put some fingers there, some hair and several winkies.
Load up the 4x4, it's festival time. We're stuffing the chill bag with nibbles and wine.
We're in the middle of a party, bum bum, don't stop the party now. Sweat is getting covered in poo poo, bum bum, a little bit of poo poo anyhow.
Problems, 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 problems piling up on you. They just keep on coming and there's nothing you can do.
Now sushi, sushi, sushi. It tastes so nice and it's healthy too.
This is my amazing music video. What the heck is happening? I just don't know. Mad ideas are sparking like a crazy machine, melting all the circuits of your boring routine.
Yeah. And that video as well created on this laptop too. So as you can imagine, it's a body of work of which I am extremely proud. Some of it is collected on the albums Song Wars 1 and Song Wars Volume 2. As far as I'm aware, the first albums to be commercially released created almost entirely on GarageBand, both of which I'm pleased to say have sold several copies. But it's not about the money for me. Most of the music I create, I simply gift to the world. I make it because I have to. It comes out of me quickly and easily like a healthy turd. Take, for example, and a final example, the music I made for an advert that is, I think, airing at the moment for Thinkbox. And this was something that I did, again, on this laptop. I'll play you the ad. Thinkbox, I think, is a organization trying to encourage more advertising. So it's quite nice, in a way, just to sort of do a meta ad for other ads. But they asked me to do this song for this ad, and it's called Harvey and the Rabbit, and this is what I came up with.
F-R-I-E-N-D-S, do you really need them? Yes. If you haven't got a friend, then you're just you. There's half as many things that you can do. Who's gonna tell you that you're not a brat? If not your best friend. The same when you're not there.
There you go. And again, created on GarageBand, and you can hear that marimba, that marimba sample. I think that's marimba sample number one. If you go into your GarageBand library there, I don't tend to go through all of them. Number one is usually the the good one. so I'll use those and then sing over it. Why waste more time? But it was fun doing it. You know, it took me, you may be surprised to hear, less than an hour to create that. And it didn't feel like work at all. I had a genuinely great time doing it. I think some of my happiest times, if I think about it, especially professionally, have been singing my songs and fiddling around with GarageBand, albeit on my own in my nutty room, singing Party Pom Pom and Country Christmas Time and all those songs that we did for the Six Music Show that we did, me and Joe. Those have been some of my favorite moments, and they have been thanks to the various laptops that I've had. You could say, I suppose, about some of these songs, especially the ones for adverts, would it be better if they had been created for their own sake and not for an advert? Well, no. I don't think so, because then no one would have heard them, and I wouldn't have been paid. I wouldn't have been paid more money than I got for the whole first series of the Adam and Joe Show. I mean, to put that in some kind of proportion, I didn't get very much for the first series of the Adam and Joe Show. But still, amazing to get paid for something that you love and something that was actually incredibly good fun and something that took less than an hour. It's wicked. So, is my laptop ruining my life? Well, not really. In fact, it's fun. It's enjoyable. And yes, there are many other serious things about laptops and their effect on culture and the way we work and the way we isolate ourselves that I could have gone into, but I just couldn't be bothered. So thank you so much. That is it for my talk. And it's a great pleasure to be here and an honor to be asked. And as I said, I feel a bit of a fraud concluding your day, but I trust that you've enjoyed the whole day, and it's a great pleasure for me to be here. So thank you very much. Goodbye.